And the people who are dissenting now are not dangers to the nation. The President of the United States is a danger to the nation. The President of the United States is taking actions which are going to make us more vulnerable and more insecure than we ever were, and all under the guise of making us more secure, and all under the guise of a war against terrorism.
From the studios of Freak Radio 96.3 FM in Santa Cruz, California, it's time for the Weekly Freak Show. My name's the V-Man, and I'll be your host for this one-hour examination of the news and events not hard in or glanced over by the corporate-controlled media. On this week's program, we'll hear a talk given by Howard Zinn, celebrated author and historian. His classic, A People's History of the United States, has sold more than 900,000 copies and is widely used in colleges and university classrooms. Howard Zinn spoke in Santa Cruz on November 14th for the 25th anniversary of the Resource Center for Nonviolence. Plus, this week's Spotlight Sound. Stand by for the Weekly Freak Show, coming up next. Howard Zinn is a man of multiple passions and gifts, and hard to nail down. He is a professor, a poet, a journalist, a stand-up comic, a celebrity magnate, a skeptic, an optimist, a gadfly, and a mensch. He is one of the country's most beloved and respected historians, and author of numerous books and plays, and a passionate activist for radical change. His classic, A People's History of the United States, has sold more than 900,000 copies and is used widely in colleges and universities. Whether his subject is war, race, politics, economic justice, or history itself, Zinn speaks and writes with clarity and humor. His recent books include You Can't Be Neutral on a Moving Train, A Personal History of Our Times, The Zinn Reader, and a play, Marx in Soho. He appeared at the Civic Auditorium in Santa Cruz, California, on the evening of November 14th, where he spoke to more than 1,200 people. We'll now hear his talk. Howard Zinn.
You know, the first thing I notice about what's going on today is this notion of a united nation, right? A nation united behind Bush. I mean, if I'm going to be united... I want to choose with whom I'm united, you see. And I'm very distressed by, uneasy, I'm trying to find the right word, by this chorus of, you know, unity, we must stand behind the president. Dan Rather, you know who he is, right? Everybody knows who, you know, people may not know who the president is, but they know who Dan Rather is. You see, Dan Rather is an anchor man, right? What is he anchored to? You say, you know, no, he is anchored to the establishment. That's the definition of an anchor person. And then he said very shortly after September 11th, Bush is my president, which was good to know. And he said, when he says get in line, I get in line. And I thought, really? This is independent journalism. You know, this is the job of a journalist to get in line when the president says get in line. I mean, that's what journalists do in a totalitarian state. That's not what you do in a democracy. In a democracy, the job of journalism is to be a watchdog of the government and to stand aside and criticize and examine what the government does, you know. And then Gore, remember? Remember? Try to remember who he is. Gore. Gore said, Bush is my commander-in-chief. And I thought, he hasn't read the Constitution. The Constitution says that the president is the commander-in-chief of the armed forces. He's not the commander-in-chief of us, you see. He's not, you know. He's, you know. So, that, you know, there's this cry for unity. I spoke a few weeks ago at Johns Hopkins, arranged by Speak Out, which also arranged this. Do you know about Speak Out? Speak Out, an amazing, amazing group of people, very mysterious. They're there somewhere in the San Francisco area, and they do amazing things. They bring speakers to campuses, speakers that otherwise would invite Oliver North. I mention him because when I spoke at Johns Hopkins, there was a series, and I was preceded by Oliver North. And the theme of the series of lectures, which had been arranged before September 11th, the theme was, because it was about multiculturalism. You know, Oliver North knows a lot about multiculturalism. And the theme was multiculturalism. And so the headline for the series of lectures was A Nation Divided. Well, by the time I got to speak at Johns Hopkins, September 11th had happened. And I saw that they had crossed out by hand on every single printed program the word divided and put in the word united. So I had something to talk about. I mean, you know, sometimes we get up here, we don't know what to talk about. But life presents something to us, and so we have something to talk about. So yes, our job is to do what the journalists won't do and what the politicians won't do, and that is to stand aside from this artificial entity called the government and to examine what it does and to speak truth about what is right and what is wrong, even if the polls say that 90%, you know all of that. I don't really believe that 90%, except in the most superficial sense, except in the sense that, you know, somebody has thrust a microphone in front of somebody. Do you support the president? Well, of course. But those same people, if you talk to them for 3 minutes, if you make 3 points to them and ask 2 questions, I've seen this again and again, and maybe you have too. People think about it. People have second thoughts. And at first, sort of Pavlovian reaction to, yes, we support the president, begins to change. Yeah, when you begin to just give a little bit of information and ask a few probing questions. So I'm very encouraged by going around the country and seeing, not just in Santa Cruz, you know, you might say, oh, Santa Cruz, well, no. Not just everywhere, you know, large numbers of people are gathering all over the country, and they do not get in line with the president on the matter of going to war in Afghanistan, you see. And if you don't know history, it's as if you were born yesterday. If you were born yesterday, you may believe anything that somebody in authority tells you, because you have no way of checking up on it. But if you know some history, you will know that when the president gets up before the microphone and says, something has happened, we must go to war, and you think of all the times in the past where a president has gotten up before a microphone and said, we must go to war, and think of all the times after that war when people stood up and looked around and said, what in the world have we done, you say. If you knew that history, no, you wouldn't immediately get in line. I mean, we're accustomed to Congress getting in line. I mean, there's a history there, too. The history is that when the president decides, or when somebody around him decides, there are people, you know, there are people around the president. The president is not a lonely man. There are people, there are very powerful people around the president. Around the president, above the president, inside the president. Historically, this is true. You know, you go back to the Mexican War of 1846, when Polk decides to go to war, Congress, just with virtually no debate, yeah, absolutely. But the troops who go down to Mexico to fight in that war look around after a while and they see the corpses on the battlefield and they think, what are we doing here? And so on the way to Mexico City, 7 of the 13 regiments that General Scott is marching to Mexico City go away, desert, go back home. And this happens again and again. Congress says, yes, yes, let's go to war. And then later on, other things happen, and people examine what went on. And we've had too many instances now of where Congress has immediately given its assent to a war without thinking. I mean, these are people supposed to think a little, right? I mean, these are our representatives. Well, they're really not our representatives. But, you know, we go to junior high school and we learn that there's, you know, a system of checks and balances. Do you remember that? Do you remember? How can you not remember that beautiful moment in junior high school, you know, when the teacher put on the board checks and balances and then drew the diagrams. Here's the executive, here's the legislative, here's the judicial, and here are the lines going back and forth. And I remember sitting there in awe, you know. Wow, this is wonderful. If one branch of government does something bad, it will be checked by another branch of government. And in that way, nothing bad can happen, you see. But when it comes to war, there are no checks and balances. When it comes to war, Congress reacts like a bunch of sheep. And we've seen this. Well, of course, we just saw what happened, right? We just saw that, you know. Bush says war, and unanimously in the House, and almost except for Barbara Lee. Right, right. Yeah. You know, unanimously in the Senate. I mean, you know, this is a system that acts this way is a corrupt political system, a system where you can't depend on your representatives to examine what the president does and decide whether he deserves a blank check to go to war. A system like that is a deeply flawed, even sick system, and needs to be drastically changed. And so we have to, and the same thing happened in the 1964, right, at the start of the Vietnam War, right, where the president gets up before the microphone. We have been attacked in the Gulf of Tonkin. Nobody knows where the Gulf of Tonkin is, you see. But, you know, I'm sure there are people who thought it was off the coast of San Francisco. No, it's halfway around the world. It's off the coast of Vietnam. Well, it turns out that all that stuff that was told about Tonkin turned out to be lies. I mean, can you utter one sentence with four lies? Yes, you can if you're a leader of the government. And lies were told about that. Nevertheless, Congress, remember, immediately, unanimously in the House, almost unanimously in the Senate, Morse, Gruning, two senators, said no. But that's what, so much for checks and balances. I go into that because I want us to understand that we cannot depend on our political system to save us from the decisions made up there in the White House by whoever is there in and out of the Lincoln bedroom. We cannot depend on that. Well, we've learned that lesson again and again in history, that we cannot depend on the political structure to save us and to solve the problems. When people say to you, and, you know, this has been said so often lately, been said by, you know, presumably intelligent people and journalists and editors and columnists, and, you know, that, you know, this is no time to dissent, right? We're at war. It's a very interesting process. You know, if you don't want any dissent, go to war. I mean, that's quickly, you know. And it's okay to have free speech, but not in time of war. In other words, exactly when you need it, exactly when it's a matter of life and death. You know, it goes back to World War I, where, you know, the Supreme Court rewrote the First Amendment. The First Amendment says Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech. And in 1917, with the United States going to war in Europe, Congress passed a law abridging the freedom of speech. And, of course, if you would draw upon your junior high school knowledge and say, well, now the Supreme Court will declare this unconstitutional, because we learned that's the job of the Supreme Court. But when the case came up before the Supreme Court of this guy handing out leaflets on the streets of New York, criticizing the war, criticizing the draft, and he has the audacity to claim that the First Amendment protects him, Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech. Well, he hasn't reckoned with the astute reasoning of members of the Supreme Court. I mean, why do you go to law school? I mean, to figure the, you know, to know how to make two equal four. And so, this, you know, the Supreme Court, headed by a supposed liberal, Oliver Wendell Holmes, you know, very well-educated, well, education, very well-educated man, you see. And he sort of amends the First Amendment and say, well, not if there's a clear and present danger, which sort of on the surface sort of makes, you know, sounds reasonable until you think, ah, this guy distributing leaflets on the streets of New York is a clear and present danger to the nation. No, Woodrow Wilson, the president, is a clear and present danger to the nation. You know. And the people who are dissenting now are not dangers to the nation. The president of the United States is a danger to the nation. The president of the United States is taking actions which are going to make us more vulnerable and more insecure than we ever were, and all under the guise of making us more secure, and all under the guise of a war against terrorism. I must tell you this, when I saw the images on television, I think all of you did, no, really horrible images of what happened on September 11th, yes, an atrocity, yes, an act of terrorism. And you see the people racing through the streets with the dust on their faces and the panic and the buildings collapsing and the fires and the people leaping out of windows. And yes, it's a horror. And then as I watched this, and after getting over the initial shock of this, I thought, this is what it must have been like when I was dropping bombs in Europe. This is what the scenes must have been like down below, which I couldn't see because you bomb from 30,000 feet, you don't see anybody. Now we have B-52s bombing from 40,000 feet. Bomb from 30,000 feet, you don't see any people, no human beings. You don't hear screams, you don't see blood, you don't see dismembered limbs, you don't see any of that. And yet that's what must have been going on. And then I thought, how many scenes like this have taken place all over the world that we have not been as sensitive to as we have been with regard to what happened in New York? And what does that mean? That things like this happen to people all over the world. Things happen in, yes, scenes like this multiplied many times in Vietnam. Scenes like this during the Korean War when we started using napalm in large quantities. Scenes like this.